Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. And this Aspire radio program is being recorded for February 21st, 2021. And we're going to be looking at how do I get emails of all sorts. Some are very complimentary and want to know more about the practice. And of course, the others are, well, what do we say? They're demeaning and sometimes unkind, but always with the purpose of saying, well, how would you do this? It seems rather ridiculous, and what's the payoff kind of thing. And so I wanted my little preamble to represent something here. If everything I do in my life is for the sake of trying to gain something, I'm going to become very small-minded, parochial in my thinking. And if that is the case with my living, then I'm really not alive yet. To come alive is to thrive in the nature of life. And I'm not talking about the biological nature of the earth. I'm talking about the nature of life itself, the livingness, the aliveness that is life itself. So that can't be translated to the human intellect. It just can't. You can write poetry about it and make songs about it, yes. I think in tones and music you can find it, but not in intellectual discussions. You have to put yourself into it. What constitutes being alive for you? What does it mean for you to be alive in this moment with me? I mean, just alive in life itself. Most people aren't alive. What they do is they run to and from one emotional, shall we say, gratification to another. Never really understanding what it was they were doing, never really coming alive. They just go through the motions of living, and they think that makes them alive. Well, in my estimation, no, that isn't true. There's a lot of people who have a heartbeat who are not alive, a lot. Most of the populace that you see, they just don't get it. And then you have to consider what it is that you depend upon to be alive. What is it that you depend upon in your mind, in your emotionality, the things that you absolutely define as being alive, life givers, that kind of thing. That's another thing you have to consider. So with all this being said, I take the approach in my life and in my work as to bringing a, shall we say, prospect of life to a person to become alive. The gift of maybe finding that which is the aliveness of any person that is beyond their emotionality. And if you can get beyond your emotionality, you can do many wonderful things. Honestly, you can. So the first question comes from John, and he does not tell me where he lives. He wrote me a big, long email, and there were a lot of things in it. And he asks, how do I take care of my mind like you speak of? And then he goes into a litany of, it's not his fault that he can't take care of his mind. You know, this is really a problem with people, a problem with my students even. They don't take care of their minds either. They just let their minds flip-flop all over from one emotion to another. And this state of emotion that most people flip-flop around is kind of a merger between DNA and genetics. Your genetics are always, you know, hitting the dial 911, 911, 911 all the time. They're always afraid. If you want to know where your fear comes from, it comes from the state of the DNA. And then when that starts happening, then the the mind naturally turns to genetics and your DNA saying, oh, we've got a problem here. We may not survive. We may not have enough money to live or whatever. And then they go to the genetics and they say, genetics, you're there to take care of all of this. Figure out a way for us to survive. And then usually and typically, boy, it gets ruthless in there in that genetic nature. So to take care of your mind, it is to see the process of thought first. You have to see it for what it is. What is the process of how you arrive at any thought that you come to or comes from what you think of as within you, and how you think of it as being legitimate? It's a legitimate thought. It's a legitimate aspiration. It's a legitimate thought that needs contemplation and anticipation and all sorts of things. You have to look at these things and see, where did these come from? If you're going to take care of your mind, really take care of your mind, you have to see the origins of your thought. What are the origins of every thought I have? Why are they there? And I will tell you why. For the most part, they are based in insecurity. The insecurity that you are hearing from the emperor of all malice within you, that the DNA is driving within us to stay alive, to stay comfortable, to be right, and to have some sense of prestige in our society. That's what it's all about. To take care of your mind. I would have to do the following things, and I'm going to give it to you, give it to my students. They roll their eyes, and they know they're not going to do it. They just know, because they like the drama. First, the first thing you have to do is not talk to your thoughts. Let your thoughts be there. Let them wangle you as they want to, but don't be wangled. Just watch your thoughts. This is what meditation is about. People tell me, I can't get rid of my thoughts. I can't meditate. That's not meditating, getting rid of your thoughts. It is simply without judgment, without any kind of right or wrong, good or bad, watching your thoughts, watching them come, watching them go. Like clouds in the sky, just watching your thoughts come and watching your thoughts go. They come, they go. They're in, they're out. They do what they do. And just watch. Don't analyze their what they're doing or what they want to do. Don't think about, in other words, focus on thoughts and think you have to act on them. Just watch them. That's the first. Then don't talk to them. And don't have conversations in your mind. Conversations of, well, you know, we should do that one. You know, what's right, what's wrong, what's bad. I don't know. What will happen if we do that? Don't think your thoughts. Most people use their thoughts to try to talk them into and out of the mindset they're in. They listen to their thoughts. They talk to them. They conspire with them. They strategize with them. They negotiate with them. In and out and in and out. Constantly looking at their thoughts and listening to them and making them your best friend. They're not your best friend. So you want to let your thoughts come and go. You're watching. And then you have to watch to such a degree that you go into third person. Now, if you watch your thoughts and you are not depressed or inspired by them, if you just watch them, a new mind will start to form inside you. A brand new mind. A mind that is not trying to become important. A mind that's not looking at things and thinking that maybe if I say this or say that or go here or go there or think this or think that or adopt this philosophy or that philosophy or whatever, if you understand what I'm saying here. If you do not talk to your mind and make it your friend, you will start to understand a new mind. A mind that we call in Zen, no mind. It is a mind that is not pathological. It is not trying to accomplish anything per se. It is insightful and it gives meaning. You'll start to see the origins of things, and it won't be through thought. It will be through something called impression. And once you start realizing the impression, the thoughts will start to fall away like leaves on an autumn tree. Just blah, gone. And you will start to have a mind that is more meditative. This means that when you are not sitting formally in meditation, you are just watching your thoughts. You are not talking to them. Meditation is both the formal sit and the daily living liveness kind of sit, where you are constantly just watching your thoughts. What am I doing? You'll start to see. When this new mind forms, and it won't take long, maybe if you're good at the watching, it could happen within a week, you will start to see these impressions. You will be guided by them. You will understand them. And you will finally realize, oh, I can't watch things on TV or movies or whatever that stimulate my emotions and overwhelm my thoughts with anxiety or fear or anger. And that's taking care of your mind when you're no longer susceptible to those kinds of things. But it takes practice. And a lot of people simply refuse to do the practice of this. They just can't do it. And I urge my students on to practice this kind of thing, but they're weak. they're old, and even the young ones can't do it because they find too much drama in their emotionality, and it's too sexy to not engage in the emotions that tell them that their bodies and their desires and their ambition and their pride and their arrogance are not good things. It's called confidence and all that other stuff. Well, there you are, John. There's the beginning of it. If you can do some of the things I just told you about, you could go on to the next step. And I'm not going to get into that here because I've got two other people I got to deal with. So thank you very much for your beautiful question. And thank you for listening to Aspire. Please forgive me. Namaste. The next question comes from Raquel. Raquel does not tell me where she lives. How do I truly seek? This is an excellent question, Raquel. What is a seeker? A real seeker, not someone who is just pandering for ideas and philosophies, but someone who is an authentic seeker. The best way to put it is you have to be fed up and done with the life and the lifestyle you're living. You have to see the bigger picture of your life. You've got to be sick of your sickness, as Lao Tzu said in the Tao Te Ching. If you're not sick of your own sickness, of the way you live your life, of realizing the gravitas of living in a world that we live in, where we kill people for whatever it is that encroaches upon our beliefs and our philosophy or whatever. When you start to really realize where you are, and that to me is the big one, the real big one, as I call it. How do you become a seeker? Do you realize where you are, what this world is all about, and where you are. Really. Do you see where you are in this kind of world, in the lifestyle that you live in the mentality you live in the society you live in the world you live in? And when I say world, I'm talking about people, a world full of diverse people. I have been teaching for a load of years, and the mischief that people can get involved in and find in the course of their lifetime absolutely blows me away. I cannot believe. I have friends who are therapists, and they say the same thing. We talk about it. What the heck? How do you get to the state of mind that you arrive at, where you think violence and hatred and bias, prejudice, that this world can be a better place through thinking and manipulating thought and believing in whatever people believe in? And that is one of the bigger causes of our difficulties. You have to see, Raquel, where the hell are you? Look around. You're a part of all this. You're not a part of it. If I am here as Greg Penn, then I'm a part of all this. A seeker realizes the consequence of their life upon not only their own living, but their future lives and the lives of others. And that matters, the lives of others. It matters. So a person who is an authentic seeker is one who isn't sidestepping the meaning of their own life and the consequences of their living. They're looking for a way out to transcend, not through death, not through society, not through emotionality, not through thought, but to sidestep, to transcend this world, to transcend first the body, which belongs to this world, and then eventually to transcend the world. But we don't want the light. We really don't. And what you're hearing me talk about is pleasant fiction, and it could be turned into nothing but pure philosophy, which would negate everything I'm trying to help you with here. So there you are. You're going to forget all of that. But the truth of the matter is, you and I are here, but what are we doing here? How did I arrive here? This is a strange world, a world where hate and fear reign supreme, and they're covered over by the idea of love and kindness. In fact, hate and fear are used as a way to excuse ourselves and make us look like we're on the right side of love or the right side of goodness or the right side of kindness. It's very difficult for people to understand, very, very difficult. But that's what we do. We don't really understand the nature of the heart. We don't really have the gravitas inside of ourselves to cut the ties that bind us to our life here on this earth. We are social animals, and we need a pack to run in. So we make families and we make friends, and everybody's got to be what they've got to be in order to serve our human psyche. And that's the way we live our life. We miss the whole entire thing. So to be a seeker is to really look at where you are, Raquel. What are you doing here? Why are you here? How did you arrive here? What state of mind, what state of emotion brought you here? You lack consciousness. Why do I lack consciousness? Ask yourself that. Where is the totality, the gravitas of the meaning of my life? Where is that? Is my life just the rambunctiousness of making babies and having family and using that as a way to counteract the toils and troubles of this world? When you and I are hiding behind family or hiding behind a mate, or we're hiding behind our career or money or whatever. We're not seekers, and it's very hard to be a seeker, because an authentic seeker is one who doesn't straddle the line of life. They go into life. They go deeply into it. Jesus said in the Gnostics, when you find, you will be troubled. He is right. You will be very troubled, because you will see it was oh so simple and yet oh so difficult to make that simplicity the life of you. Many things we have lived, Raquel, that were very ugly, very, very ugly, and we just reverted to the strength of our genetic nature that overcame us and made our life what we see today. Ooh, good question. Forgive me. Thank you for asking. Namaste. And the last question comes from Karen in Illinois, she says. I did a stint in Illinois, in Decatur, Illinois. Ouch. How do I see how I love? And then she goes into all sorts of things about how she loves. Those things that you talk about in your email about how you love, you know, about your family, your friends, your baby, your husband, you know, your favorite holidays, things like that, that is not love. That is obsession, compulsion. And it comes from both the DNA and your genetic nature. You want to see how you love? Best thing to do is to see the extent of your love. Where does your love stop? Where do you end your love? With your enemies? Most people do. They make enemies in their mind that are not enemies, but we need to have those who are for us, and we need those who are against us. We need a certain level of, a conflict in our life. With the right amount of conflict in our life, we can do many, many things. We can think any thought we want and get all sorts of crazy and get obsessed and compulsed, and then before you know it, bingo, there's the problem. More and more issues and more people that we like and dislike and all of that other stuff. So to see how you love is, you really want to see where your love just falls off the cliff. Where is it you draw the line and say, anyone who walks over that line, I don't love? Really? And then you can kind of cover that up cleverly and say, well, I love them. I just don't love what they do, but I really don't like them. Anyone who threatens the following things: your self-worth, the worth of your life in the sense of who you hang out with and what your philosophy is, anyone who seems to question the way you live your life, these are generally people who are your nemesis, your problem children in your life. And there you can see how you love. If you don't love your enemy as you would love your friends, if you do not have compassion and forgiveness in your lifestyle, then you're never going to love at all. So it's easy to say, I love you because you do this. When you look at someone or something and say, I love that, and then you add, because you know you are not in love. Not at all. If your love has a reason rather than a devotion, then you're going to miss your entire life. You're going to be like one of them that only loves people that love them. And what did Jesus say? There's no reward in that. So you've got to look at where you fall off the cliff. And when you understand that, then you understand how you love and what your real work is in this lifetime. I gotta go. Thank you for your question, Karen. It was wonderful. Thank you for listening. Be back on the air next week. Have a beautiful, beautiful day. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste.